This is Audible.
This audio program is presented by ETA Incorporated. Expect Ascension. The Secret to Success, Audio Edition. Written by Eric Thomas. Narrated by Eric Thomas and Charles Arrington. Chapter 1. Boiling Point. Anger is a wind which blows out the lamp of the mind. Robert Green Ingersoll.
Fuck you! That's right, fuck you! I hate you! Man, I wish I could take back every word I said to her that day, but I couldn't. I swear it wasn't premeditated. Man, if I could only go back and turn the hands of time, but I couldn't. I wanted to do it differently, but I couldn't. Man, I should have just sat her down years ago. We should have just talked it out. I should have got it out of my system. I shouldn't have been so secretive. The day it happened, I should have just told my mother. I feel betrayed. I feel hurt. I'm angry. I don't feel like I can trust you anymore. Why didn't I just sit her down? Why? That was my mother. Why didn't we just talk about it? Well, I guess at that point it was too late. I had gone too far. Man, I couldn't go back. I couldn't change things at that point. If we could have just had a heart-to-heart conversation. But I guess it was too late. It was what it was. Hello? Hello?
What you still doing in the bed?
What? It's Sunday. It's cold. Football season is over. Man, I got the house to myself. Unless you know something I don't know, there ain't no reason for the kid to get out of bed. The question is, why you calling the crib so early? Don't you got a girl or something?
I'm lifting weights, man. I need somebody to spot me.
Why you ain't say that in the first place, man? Give me about 30 minutes. I need to hop in the shower real quick, throw on some gear. And I jumped out of the bed, grabbed a pair of my all-red Lathrop High School jogging pants, my red hoodie, a pair of socks, a white t-shirt, my underwear, and headed for the shower. All of a sudden, as I was going to the shower, I heard a noise coming from downstairs, but that was crazy. Nobody was at the crib but me. It sounded like someone opening the garage door, but no, that's impossible. My parents were in Chicago visiting my Aunt Wanda. But as I listened closely, the footsteps sounded louder. Then all of a sudden, I heard loud footsteps moving toward the living room. My heart started pounding so loud, I was like, I know ain't no intruder in the house. My adrenaline kicked in, and I started to tiptoe back down into the room, grabbed a baseball bat from under my bed, and I headed toward the stairs. With the bat tightly clenched in both hands, I gently walked down each stair, trying not to make a sound. As I approached the last step, I turned my body toward the direction where I heard the sound, and out of the corner of my eyes, I saw a large male frame standing in the middle of the living room area. I walked slowly toward the figure with the bat at my side, ready to swing and bring whoever it was to the ground. I bent down, trying to stay low, and suddenly, the image became clear. Man, it was my old dude. But that couldn't be. My man was supposed to be in Chicago with my mother. I stopped dead in my tracks, like a deer. Then I did an about face, and I ran slowly back up the stairs, quietly. With each step, my heart pounded harder and harder. And once I made it to the top of the stairs, I shot in my room, grabbed the phone, and called my boy Melvin back. Dog, you ain't gonna believe this. My old dude at the crib.
Yo, dude at the crib? I thought you said he was in Chicago.
I thought they were too, but apparently he's not. Man, Melvin, I think he's been at the crib the entire weekend.
All right, calm down, bro. Just calm down. Whatever you do, don't panic. Just act normal.
Just act normal?
Yeah, E, just act normal. He probably doesn't even know, dog.
You right. yeah, you're right. Just act normal. All right. Hold on. Hey, didn't we put the beer bottles in the garbage? Didn't we put everything back like we found it? Like, didn't we clean the crib real good? Yeah. You're right. I'm just tripping. He didn't notice. We did trash all the bottles and clean the grill, right? Melvin didn't say anything. Once I got off the phone with Melvin, I quickly hopped in the shower, man. I'm talking about my heart was racing. And when I got out, I threw on my jogging pants, my hoodie. I headed down the stairs and out the door. And as I was halfway out the door, all of a sudden, man, I heard, "Eric." It was my old dude. "Eric." "Yes, sir." "Do you know what your mother did with the steak?" "Steak? What steak?" I knew I had to be tight with my game. I headed toward the kitchen trying to keep a straight face. Yeah, I kept thinking about what Melvin said. Just stay calm and act like nothing ever happened. "Son, I'm going to ask you again. Are you sure you have no idea what your mother did with the steak?" "Yes, sir. She ain't mentioned nothing to me about no steak." "All right," he said. "All right, Dad. I'm about to go with my boy Melvin's house for a while." As I walked out of the door slowly, as to suggest everything was calm and cool, normal, like nothing happened. But I knew if my old dude found out I threw a party at the house that night and barbecued the steak, I was a dead man walking. And in the back of my mind, I had a real strange feeling that my father didn't buy my story, and that as soon as my mom got home from Chicago, he was going to check out my story and find out what really happened. And if they put two and two together, that's right, if they put all the pieces together, man, I was going to have to get out of that house before my father killed me. Stop being so paranoid, E. You know how mean your old dude is. If he thought for one second, like one moment, you had a party at the crib last night, he would have murdered you on spot. That's right. You would have been dead right at that point. You haven't said a word, dog, since you've been here. For real, E, chill out, man. It's all good. Tomorrow, everything will be back to normal, bro. We'll be in school, and it'll be like this thing never happened. Hello, how are you? Melvin's mom said as she picked up the phone. I got real quiet. I can't explain it, but I knew something was wrong. I went to the stairwell so I could hear exactly what she was saying. Like I said, I can't explain it, but somehow I just knew that was my mother on the other end of the phone. Once again, man, my heart started racing, pounding. It was early evening, and that was around the time my mother generally made it back whenever she drove home from Chicago. As a matter of fact, they were together last night, she told the person on the other end. "Oh, not a problem at all. Have a good evening. I'll talk to you soon." Click. It was like the tone in Melvin's mom was different. She didn't sound like she was speaking to a close friend. "Eric, that was your mother. She wants you to come home." I knew it. I knew I shouldn't have listened to you, Mel. Man, I knew I shouldn't have threw that party at the crib, I said while I was pacing the floor back and forth. Man, we probably left all kind of evidence, man. He's about to kill me. I knew I shouldn't have listened to y'all fools. Stop acting like a punk and calm down. You want me to go with you? Trying to impress Melvin, I lied. No, I ain't scared of him. Let me get my jacket. I'm good. I'll call you if I need you. You know I got your back, Melvin said sincerely. And even though I knew he had my back, I was not in the least bit comforted by him or his words. He didn't have to face my father. I did. On my way home, I cut through the neighbor's yard, taking my usual shortcut. But then, I thought about it, and I backtracked. It took the scenic route. It didn't make a lot of sense to rush home for a butt whipping. As I walked toward the house, I told myself, party or no party, right or wrong. I wasn't taking no more whippings from him. He wasn't gonna put his hands on me ever again. Look, I was the only 16-year-old on the block still getting whippings in high school. I had to wear long-sleeve shirts to school to hide the bruises on my arm that I got from trying to protect myself from that belt. It actually looked worse than it felt. But what hurt the most was the fact that my classmates would joke on me about it. And when I walk in the house, if anyone, and I mean anyone, says anything to me about getting a whipping, it's on. As I grab the knob on the screen door and walk through the garage into the house, I kept telling myself, relax, calm down, act normal. I deliberately went through the garage and not the front door because I knew by going through the garage, it would give me a few extra minutes to gather myself. When I walked in, I paused for about 30 seconds. Breathe in. Breathe out. E, gain your composure. And then I started practicing. Ma, what's up? Miss Brown said you wanted to talk to me. I must have practiced that about a million times. Ma, what's up? Miss Brown said you wanted to talk to me. Before I mustered up enough courage to walk in that house and into the family room and face my parents. And I'll never forget, as I walked into the family room, the sight of my father struck fear in my heart. I opened up my mouth and all the moisture evaporated. And my voice began to crack. Miss Brown, I stuttered, said you wanted to see me? Yes. I talked to your dad yesterday and he said the steak was missing. Do you know exactly what happened to it? No, ma'am. And I'm sticking to my story. No, ma'am. Well, that's strange because your father and I found beer bottles in the backyard and the grill looks like someone recently cooked on it. I'm going to try this again, son. Did you have a party here last night? Party? No, ma'am. I didn't have no party last night here. I tried to keep a straight face, but it was difficult because my mom always knew when I was lying. She looked me dead in my face. Stop lying, boy. Stop lying. You get on my damn nerves. How could you have a party in my house, eat the groceries your father and I work for, and have absolute strangers in my house? What in the hell is wrong with you? What were you thinking? I didn't say a word. I just stared at her. Eric, do you hear me talking to you? I asked you a question. What in the hell were you thinking? I want an answer, and I want it now. I didn't even flinch. I just stood there with a blank look on my face. Son, your mother asked you a question, he chimed in. I pretended as if I didn't hear a word he was saying. I know you hear me talking to you, son. I said your mother asked you a question. He typically used a different tone when he had to repeat himself. He was from the old school. I knew the drill. If you did not respond the first time, he'd ask you a second time, a bit louder, stronger, giving you the benefit of the doubt that maybe you didn't hear him the first time. And trust me, he wasn't necessarily trying to scare you by projecting his voice. It was more than a warning. Generally, after the second or third time, I would surrender, give in. I would play the dumb role and act like I didn't hear him the first time. And the second time, I would respond by saying, yes, sir. And then give him the answer he was looking for. But not this time. Not this time. Boy, you better answer your mother and you better answer her now. Before I knew it, I snapped. And my mind went blank, like I was physically in the room, but mentally, I was long gone. You can't make me. You can't make me. I murmured under my breath as I bit my bottom lip and shook my head as if to say, not this time, bruh, not this time. I knew what I was doing was dangerous. I had heard how his 6-foot 8-inch, 250-pound frame had annihilated me in twice my size. But I was tired, man. I was tired of living in fear, but I knew it. I knew it. As I was racing toward him in an attempt to pass him and try to make my way to the garage, I made my initial move out of the family room toward the hallway. And as soon as I made my move, he blocked the pathway and he moved in. My heart started racing, man. He had an obvious advantage in both size and reach. I thought somehow, man, somehow I could offset it with my quickness. And so I launched toward him in an attempt to just knock him down, to give myself enough time and enough space to run into the hallway leading toward the garage. And as I went to push him, it didn't work. And he grabbed my arm, and before I knew it, he had me in a headlock and I was grasping for air. I tried to use my lower body strength to force his legs from up under his body, but it didn't work. The next thing I knew, he was hitting me with some serious blows to the body, helpless. The only thing I could do was call on Jesus. I'm gonna keep it real. I didn't go to church, and I definitely wasn't a Christian, but I figured I had nothing to lose by calling on God. God, if you can hear me, if you're out there, help. This dude about to kill me. And within a matter of seconds, I don't know what happened, but I was able to push him off of me using both arms to his body. And all of a sudden, he loosed that cobra-like grip he had on me. I began to pull my head back in an attempt to regain my balance. And the only thing, I mean the only thing I wanted to do was create enough space between me and him so I could make it out of that house. I wasn't trying to hurt nobody. I just wanted to be free. I pushed myself away and I ran toward the garage. I made it safely into the washroom, slammed the door shut behind me to give myself some extra seconds. I ran through the garage, exited the door to the far left. I figure, he would go through the front door and try to cut me off, but I was too quick, and by the time I made it out of the garage, I noticed he and my mom were just getting to the porch. And once I made it to the street, I knew I was clear. I knew I was safe, because neither one of them was quick enough to catch me, and I stopped running. I stopped running once I passed the mailbox and I got into the street, and I turned and faced my mother. And all I remember thinking was, I waited 4 long years to say this, and I wasn't gonna hold my tongue. It was late in the afternoon, as luck would have it. On this particular Sunday, it seemed like everyone in our neighborhood was outside. It felt like a scene out of a movie. All the neighbors stopped what they were doing. All eyes were on our family. Tears began to run down my face uncontrollably, and I exploded. Fuck you. Fuck you. I hate you. I hate you. I swear to God, I hate you. You watched him put his hands on me, and you ain't say nothing. You never said a word to him. You should have protected me. I hate you.
Chapter 2, Sweet Little Lies. I'm sorry, Mama. I never meant to hurt you. I never meant to make you cry. But tonight, I'm cleaning out my closet. Eminem.
My body felt numb. And in my anger, I said things I thought I would never say to the person that I loved the most. I never intended to hurt my mom. I guess I held it in for so long that when it finally came out, it came out with no regard for anything or anyone. Tears ran down my face as I thought, not in a million years did I ever think my mom would lie to me. It hurt my heart just watching her stand there on the porch next to him after he just tried to kill me. It was like she was saying, son, no matter what, right or wrong, I'm going to support my husband to the end, and I don't care how you feel about it. Never in my wildest dreams did I think she could do or say anything to hurt me as much as she did when she kept that secret from me. But I was wrong. This hurt just as much. But once I snapped out of my trance, I realized I had to make a decision, and I had to make it quick. The question was, do I run to the right, east toward Telegraph Road, or do I run towards the left, west toward Lassa Road? I decided to run west. It all happened so fast, I wasn't sure where I was headed. And to be honest, it didn't matter as long as I could get the hell away from them. And when I got to the end of the block, I kept straight and ran through the neighbor's backyard to Ivanhoe Lane. I wanted to make sure my father couldn't trace my steps. I kept running and running until I could no longer recognize where I was. And after I passed the liquor store on 11 Mile and Lassa, I noticed the empty field behind the house. As I got closer to the field, I discovered that it was a small park. The park had a few pieces of playground equipment, you know, like a swing set, the monkey bars, and the metal rip slide, all enclosed by sand. I sat there on the edge of that slide, trying to catch my breath. And once I regained my composure, I walked over to the swing, I sat down, and I began to swing slowly. I tried not to think about, you know, the day and what had happened, but it was impossible not to. It was a catch-22. On one hand, I wanted to know the truth, but on the other hand, I was afraid. As far back as I could remember, certain family members tried to convince me that my mother was keeping something from me. I was really strong in the beginning. Whenever someone would slightly hint about my mother and some family secret, I would dismiss it. Why? Because my mother would never keep the truth from me. But as the years passed, it kept eating at me. I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take not knowing any longer. And so I took matters into my own hands. As I approached the hallway leading into my parents' room, I heard my conscience say, Eric, don't do it. Come on, you know this isn't right. You know you shouldn't go into your parents' room looking through their personal belongings. If you really want to know, just call your mom and ask. I stopped for a quick second to acknowledge the voice, but just like so many other times before, I ignored it. I walked out of the hallway and slowly into their room, past the bed and toward their dresser drawer. I couldn't decide if what I was looking for was in the armoire or the dresser, and I didn't have all day to decide. My father, he was a supervisor at GM, which meant he could pop in the crib at any moment. I stood there for about 30 seconds when suddenly a light came on. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. My index finger was pointing at the honey pine finished drawer when I got to that last moe. And so I walked toward the dresser and I cautiously opened the top left drawer. I wanted to make sure no one else knew that I had been in that drawer. So I memorized where everything was so I could put things back exactly how I found them. And when I opened that drawer, I noticed a silver box with a lock. It looked like something my parents would keep important papers in. But I didn't know how much time I had, so I moved it to the side and began looking through the papers in the top drawer. I grabbed the first set of papers. I began to shake. And as I looked through them, I didn't see anything. So I began putting them all back into the top drawer sequentially so I would not forget what order they were in. And after a few minutes of looking and finding nothing relevant, I began feeling bad. You know, I felt bad for going through their things in the first place. All I saw was a bunch of junk mail and old receipts. And just as I was about to close the drawer and get out of Dodge, I noticed a piece of paper that looked like a birth certificate. I stared at it for a minute, debating if I really, really, really wanted to look at it. My heart sank in my chest. I pulled it close to my face and I studied it like an exam. The very first thing I noticed was the city in which I was born. That section had Chicago, Illinois, my mother's maiden name and my father's name. The birth certificate seemed legit. It had the official state of Illinois insignia and the words Certificate of Live Birth in bold letters. The first section had my name, Eric Douglas Thomas, my birth date and the hour I was born. The second section showed my sex and the county I was born in. The third line seemed legit as well. It indicated that I was born in Chicago within city limits. Everything seemed cool until I got to the parent section. First, it listed my mom's name, her age at the time of my birth, and the city she resided in. From the looks of it, my father's information was correct as well, but something seemed a little strange. My father's section didn't even contain the relation to child question. He just signed his name or the father's name. But my mother, her section had the question clearly spelled out, relation to the child, mother. And then there was that red flag. That was the section that asked for their age. I knew for certain that there was a 4-year age difference between my parents. So I did the math. At 18, my mom was living in Chicago, finishing high school at Dunbar High. And my father was in college at Texas Southern playing basketball. Come to think of it, my father was from Detroit. He never even lived in Chicago. So if he lived in Detroit and my mom lived in Chicago, if she was in high school and he was in college, that couldn't have been possible. They didn't even know each other. And to make it worse, I already knew they weren't married at the time I was born. I started to feel lightheaded. And my heart started racing faster and faster. And I started sweating. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I started to tell myself maybe they were shocked when they found out my mom was pregnant and they didn't know what to do. Or maybe they were too young to get married and needed more time to figure out what they were trying to do. I wasn't sure, but there had to be a reasonable explanation. I tried to come up with every reason I could to justify what was happening. The only thing left for me to do, the only thing left for me to do was to call my mom. Yeah, I'll call my mom. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll call my mom and she'll straighten all this out. I remember picking up the phone and quickly dialing her work number.
Microfilm,
my mother said in her professional voice. Ma, can you hear me? I need to ask you a question. She could tell something was wrong in my voice.
What is it, son?
If I ask you, will you promise to tell me the truth?
I promise. Now, what is it?
Is Dad my real father? The silence. Let's just say the silence penetrated my soul. It might have only lasted for a few seconds, but I promise you, those few seconds seemed like a lifetime. And finally she said, "No, son, he isn't your real father."
Chapter 3, I'm a survivor. Now that you're out of my life, I'm so much better. You thought that I'd be weak without you, but I'm stronger. You thought that I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. You thought that I'd be sad without you. I laugh harder. You thought I wouldn't grow without you. Now I'm wiser. You thought that I'd be helpless without you, but I'm smarter. You thought that I'd be stressed without you, but I'm chilling. Destiny's Child.
I gotta admit, as the sun started to set, I got real nervous. Although this wasn't my first time being away from home, it was the first time I left home and didn't have a clue as to where I was going. And the darker it got, the more unsettled I was. Somehow, the anger I felt from the situation that took place earlier between me and my parents, it vanished. And fear, yup, fear of the unknown had replaced the feelings of anger and any other emotion I had at that time. I felt overwhelmed every time I thought about where I was going to sleep and what I was going to eat. I got nauseous just thinking about how long it might be before I had a normal life again. And all of a sudden it began to hit me that I never thought the whole thing through. I let my emotions get the best of me. And just as the words I shouldn't have were coming out of my mouth, I heard my inner voice say, "Humble yourself." That's right, Eric. Humble yourself and go back home. Apologize and deal with the consequences. If you go back, the punishment will be harsh, but your parents, yeah, they will eventually forgive you. I can't do it, I kept repeating myself. I can't do it. I started scratching my head and rubbing my face to clear my thoughts. I couldn't believe that I even allowed that thought to enter my mind. And I decided from that point forward, no matter how terrified I was, no matter how lonely I was, no matter how hurt I felt, or how defeated I was not going back. I made a vow to myself that day, today I will live as a free man and I will never return home. I knew I had gone too far, and I also knew that from that point forward, I had to take care of myself. You know, I remember seeing stuff like this on National Geographic. You know, one day the cub sits by watching the mother lioness intensively staring down its prey, and at the prime moment, attacks, devours, and shares her kill with the cub. But a few months later, it's a different situation entirely. The cub routinely follows his mother just as he had in the past. And in the back of his mind, he's thinking, dinner will be served in a few short minutes. He watches his mother stare down her prey and waits for the opportunity to attack. Finally, she makes her move and begins to run at top speed. As she approaches her victim, she launches into the air on the back of her prey and forces it to the ground. Once on the ground, the lioness cuts the victim's throat with the nails from her claws. And as the lioness begins to devour her kill, the young cub moves in closer and waits for his mother to rip off a healthy portion of meat to share. But to his surprise, the lioness turns on him as if her son were an enemy. And in that moment, the cub realizes he must hunt his own prey if he is to eat again. It was about 8:45 p.m., pitch black, and reality was setting in. I was homeless. The whole day was like a blur, and I was in a daze. It was as if I was paralyzed. Every time I thought about moving, the strangest thing happened. When I tried to walk, I was literally stuck. And I said to myself, "Eric, you need to go somewhere, man. You got to get somewhere where it's warm, someplace safe." But every time I tried to take a step forward, nothing happened. I heard a voice whisper in my ear, "You just going to sit there and do nothing? Is that it? Look, every time you get in a crunch, like a little punk, you freeze up. You say you want to be grown. That's right, you want to be a grown man. Well, you are a grown man now. Ain't nobody going to bail you out this time." And as hard as it was to listen to those words, I knew they were real. Like the cub, I was on my own. Suddenly, I stopped. I stood up tall. I lifted up my head. I wiped the tears from my eyes. I cleared my throat. By this time, it was a little past 9:30, and there were a few things I knew for sure. For one, the weekend was over, and I had to go to school the next day, and I needed to decide where I was going to sleep and how I was going to eat. I don't ever remember a time before that situation that I was really eager to go to school. It's funny how one situation can change your entire perspective. But now, man, I was eager to get to school in the morning. It's funny, when I walked out of the front door of Lathrop High School that Friday afternoon, school was the last thing on the kids' mind. Other than recess, lunch, and track and field, I didn't care much about school at all. I was already pissed off. Why? Because my parents moved us out of Detroit to the suburbs. One day, just out of the blue, man, my parents told me I wouldn't be returning to Detroit Henry Ford High School. They told me I would be attending Southfield Lathrop. I had gone to neighborhood schools like my entire life, since I was in the first grade. First, I went to McKinney, then to Taft, and finally, I became, that's right, a Trojan, Detroit Henry Ford Trojans. I couldn't believe my parents could be so selfish. What was I supposed to do? Just start all over again in the 11th grade? Man, maybe my parents would have been justified. You know, had they sent me to a new school maybe my freshman year, but to do that during my junior year, man, they crazy. I had experienced 8 years of bonding with my friends, and all that went down the drain because my parents wanted to move to the suburbs. Man, and going from a predominantly black school to a predominantly white school created some unique challenges. There were only, I don't know, maybe about 5 or 6 black teachers, and it was obvious that the white teachers were not accustomed to dealing with African-American students, especially African-American male students. I was in the principal's office on a regular basis for either disrupting the class or what they call insubordination. And not to mention the fact that I was having some serious academic challenges. You know, changing from the Detroit public school curriculum to Southfield public school curriculum, I mean, it was a disparity, to say the least. Lathrop's academic pace was 10 times faster than Detroit. And I hardly ever had homework at Henry Ford. And I rarely had more than one test a week. But at Lathrop, man, we had homework on a regular basis. And it was nothing for us to have 3 or more teachers give us a test the same exact week. I hated everything about Lathrop, the faculty and staff, the academics, and on top of that, their athletic program was terrible. Just 3 days ago, the only reason I wanted to be in school, to keep it 100, was for the girls, the field trips, and the pep rally. Now, I couldn't wait for the doors to open. I needed to get out of the cold and get into a place where the kid felt safe. But first and foremost, I needed to lay my head down somewhere in walking distance by my bus route. I thought to myself, there was a spot near Melvin's house which seemed perfect at first, but I was somewhat leery because my parents knew where Melvin lived and would almost certainly check for me there. Don't even think about it, I said to myself before I could finish my next thought. Have you lost your mind? See, I knew it was risky, but was it worth taking the risk? I was kind of thinking, if I went to the spot near Melvin's house, it would be secluded enough so that no one would know where I was, but close enough to Melvin's house that if anything happened, that's right, if anything jumped off, I could run to his house for help. So I stood there for a few seconds, trying to convince myself that getting up from that spot, you know, behind the park, headed toward my final destination for the night, was worth it. It was more difficult than it sounded, because even though it was officially spring in Detroit, somehow the sun didn't get the message. See, Michigan's weather is real weird like that. It might be in the upper 50s during the day and drop to the lower 20s by nightfall. The first few steps were hard. The last thing I wanted to do, especially on an empty stomach, was walk another mile. When I first stood up, I couldn't feel my legs, and I was fatigued. But a surge of energy all of a sudden kicked in. I took my hands out of my Navy East Bay Letterman jacket and sped up my pace. As I passed the synagogue on Lansing Road and was approaching Melvin Street, Ivanhoe, I thought about stopping for a quick second. I wanted to see my boy. But I know I didn't need to get sidetracked. And while I was walking, I couldn't help but think, how in the world, in less than 24 hours, did my whole world turn upside down? I went from living in a middle-class environment, which consists of having my own room, wearing the latest gear, going to upscale restaurants, traveling every now and again, having my own car, to being homeless. Man, it felt like a bad dream, but I knew it was much more than a bad dream this time. After walking more than an hour, I had made it. It had been a long, long day, and I was ready to get some sleep and get up for school the next day. But something in my spirit was saying, take a peek through the window. Look in the house, just to be on the safe side. Make sure no one is awake. And as I expected, the lights were off, and it appeared that my parents were asleep. I figured the backyard of my parents' house would be the safest place for me to lay my head until I could find a better place to stay. My survival instincts kicked in, and I went to my neighbor's patio and borrowed their sofa cushions from their patio set. There were these big bushes in the yard that sat about, 6 inches from the house. I figured if I slept between the wall and the bushes, no one would ever see me. And once my bed was situated, I put my arms through my shirt to keep warm, placed my coat over me, and as I laid there trying to fall asleep, I noticed how gorgeous the sky was. It had a deep black coat that made the stars shine brightly. I sat there for a minute as I looked in the sky. And I began to whisper a short prayer. God, I don't know if you really exist, but if you do, and if you could hear me, I need help. I need help. Please keep me safe tonight. Forgive me for all the things I've done wrong. In Jesus' name, amen.
When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. 1 Corinthians 13:11. Chapter 4. Change starts with you. Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. Leo Tolstoy.
For 4 long years, I dreamt about it. I talked about it. I longed for it. I kept telling myself, E.T., just hold on, man. It won't be long. Before you know it, you'll be 18 years old and you'll be out of this house. You won't have to worry about him or her for the rest of your life. By then, you would have graduated from high school, moved out the house, man, and you'll be on your way to college. And once you get to college, you'll never have to come back to this house again. Well, I guess I got real lucky because my wish came true 2 years before my 18th birthday. That's right, at 16 years old, I was homeless. But there was one small problem. I left home with nowhere to go. And what should have been a celebration of my independence turned into a nightmare. Man, how could I be so stupid? How could I be so dumb? Like, I literally slammed the door and walked out of a 4-bedroom,
2.5 bath, fully furnished. We're talking about refrigerator stock, 2,700 square foot home, and ran into a horrifying emptiness of sleepless nights, begging for food, and eating out of trash cans. Man, if I would have just compared, just thought about what I was giving up for what I was gaining. And in my case, I was gaining absolutely nothing. Principle 1. Don't make a habit out of choosing what feels good over what's actually good for you. When I stormed out of that house that day, my father looked at me dead in my eyes and said, "Eric, you better think about what you're getting ready to do before you do it. Because if you walk out of this house right now, if you walk out of those doors, you're saying to me that you're a grown man. So let me make myself clear, real clear. If you leave, you will never, ever come back to this house again. Do I make myself clear?" Let me just keep it 100, man. I was so fed up with him and the way he treated me that I wasn't even fazed by his little statement. Let me stop, guys, because this is a great opportunity, right? This is a great learning opportunity. I'm going to be the first to say that generally when things didn't go my way, man, I reacted out of anger and emotion. And because of that, because I operated out of anger and emotion, I generally landed myself in an awful situation. So let's stop and do this exercise. If I told you I would give you $10 million to jump out of a Boeing 757 aircraft, that's right, with no parachute, what would you say? Yeah, you probably said no, right? And I ain't mad at you, because had you given me that same question, right, back then, I would have gave you the same response, right? Even though I probably could have used $10 million at that point in my life. But it makes no sense, right, getting $10 million if you did. So that's probably why you said no. But for those of you who answered no, you would be very disappointed if you found out that that 757 aircraft was not 30,000 feet above sea level. That's right. That monstrous machine had never left the ground. And so your jump, it probably would have only been about 6 feet. So do me a huge favor. Consider all the facts before making a decision and ask yourself as many questions as you can about the situation before you make a decision. Right? I've learned over the years that the higher the level of emotion, the lower the level of reasoning. All right. Let me give you an example. If your emotions are at a 10, your ability to reason is probably at a 0. All right, one more. If you're at a 9 in terms of your emotion, your reasoning is probably at a 1. I'm not suggesting that emotions don't play a part, right? Emotions are very, very important, right? But taking action based purely on emotion is dangerous, man, and it could cost you everything, as it did in my illustration. Principle 2, avoid being your own worst enemy. What's holding you back? You, not anyone else. At age 13, Tim was like an older brother to me. He was responsible for helping me earn my street credibility. The process was similar to what is known in the African culture as rites of passage, or in the Jewish community as a bar mitzvah. Once a male reached puberty on our block, he officially crossed over into a brand new world. The first couple of years, it was all about the bravado and the ladies. And Tim, he stressed this one point: don't ever be the person to start a fight, but you better damn sure finish it. From that day on, until I was about 14, Tim, his brother Wayne, and the rest of the guys on the block beat the brakes off of me until they felt I was capable of handling myself in a brawl. And of all the lessons Tim imparted on me, he was most proud that he personally schooled me on how to be a ladies' man. He gave me a full anatomy lecture, which included the extended version of The Birds and the Bees. And in addition to the lectures, we watched a few Birds and the Bees for Dummy. That's right, demonstrational videos. I think the first few demo videos were like Deep Throat and Debbie Does Dallas. I'm not sure why I didn't think to call Tim when the thing first went down. I guess I was trying to work things out on my own. It didn't take long, though, before I realized I was in trouble and I needed some help. And so I stopped and I called to see if Tim could come to the rescue. Yo, Tim, what's up, E.T.? I know it's been a long time, man, since I hollered at you, but, man, I'm kind of in a bind and I need you. Tim didn't hesitate. What you need, little bruh? Man, I really need a place to lay my head for a while until I get on my feet. What happened? You and your old dude get into a fight again? Yeah, but this time, man, I promise you, I ain't never going back. I can't deal with that mess anymore. E, where are you right now? Where are you? I'm on my way. Tim lived in his own two-bedroom apartment off of Woodward Avenue in the Palmer Park area. Talk about a dream becoming a reality. It was a perfect situation. I'm talking about total freedom. No mom, no dad, no rules, no regulations. I could come and go as I please, and I wouldn't have to worry about doing any chores. At least that's what I thought. Tim, he envisioned things a little bit differently. I remember our first conversation a few days after I moved in. Tim said, "Little bruh, look, you're a grown-ass man now, and I'm not going to treat you like anything else. I'm going to say this one time and one time only. If, that's right, if you handle your business, everything between us will be just fine. But if not," and then he gave me that look. "Number one, you have to finish school. I repeat, you have to finish school, and you better not miss one day unless you are deathly ill. Oh, and there's no skipping." That's right. This is a no skip zone. "And two, I work, and I don't have time to be running back and forth to your school because of some behavior problems. So you better act like you got sense. And if you get in any trouble, I mean it, in any trouble, you on your own. And finally, I will pay the rent. I'll pay the phone bill. I'll pay the electricity bill. But, little bruh, I can't afford to feed you. You're going to have to, listen to me, you're going to have to get a part-time job so you could take care of your own personal needs. And I know I said that was the last thing, but I'm going to need you to find somewhere else to crash from time to time. You know I can't have you in the crib when I bring the chicks through. I know it's a two-bedroom and all, but it's still a bachelor's pad. So when you see that red shoestring hanging off the door outside, come back in the morning so you can shower before school." Man, not 2 months after that conversation, Tim kicked me out the crib. Man, not 2 months after. Tim was a police officer, so he was hardly at home. And with no adult supervision, I got to be honest, man, I reverted back to the OET. I had no interest in school, so I skipped, got in trouble. He got phone calls. Man, and it was a challenge waking up every morning at 5:30 a.m. so I could get dressed and get up and catch the 6:30 bus. Man, and some days, like I pretended like I was going to school. I got up, I got dressed, but I hung out on the block all day long until it was time to come home. Man, I had far less discipline than I did when I lived with my parents, man. And my interest in school, it had hit an all-time low. I mean, it was crazy. Here I go thinking, being with Tim, two bedroom, no chores, no mom, no dad, no responsibilities, like total freedom. Like this was it. This is what I always dreamed of. Oh, what I longed for. And man, I messed it up just like I did my parents' house. Principle 3. You can change environments, but until you change yourself, nothing else will ever change.
So listen to me. If you don't get anything else out of chapter 4, make sure you understand.